All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Tuesday, February 13th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
Flueless James Davis.
Oh, we'll talk about the flu in a second. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head on over to DFSR.com/fantasy to get a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. NBA, MLB, when the time comes around. Someone actually asked me like when the first MLB set of projections are going to be up. I was like, slow down, everybody. MLB, NFL, obviously. We covered all everything that we offer under one pack. We offered under one package. We don't section it off by subscriber or by who wrote the articles or whatever. It's just if it's on our site, you get it with a part of the membership. So dfsr.com/fantasy, and you are all good to go. Buddy, the flu ran through your family like wildfire. And I was just trying to compare, I asked you before, but maybe you can just let the listeners know what it's like to just have a terrible immune system. And then when you and your wife are paired together to make it so that your kids have even worse immune systems.
I don't find your joking very amusing. the flu has been very hard on all of us here. It's too soon for me to offer any sort of reply. Just know that that was really insensitive and really cuts deep. Hopefully I can stay focused for the rest of this podcast.
Well, no problem, because you can rest assured that now that I've made that comment, our family will contract the flu.
I hope so. Except for a little baby. I don't know if I can say her name on the podcast. I don't want that little sweet little baby to get the flu, but the rest of you guys can deal with it.
That's why I shouldn't even joke about it, honestly, because I'd be too sad to think about it.
Keep joking about it.
We have an interesting 6-game slate in the NBA going tonight. There's some injury news hanging out there. I think most of it will be resolved before lock, because there's a 7 o'clock. Well, actually, I don't know though, because there's a 7 o'clock game. Then there, most of the games happen around 8 o'clock, and then there's a late 10:30 game. But so there could be, especially with a couple of these game time decisions. I'm not sure if we'll have the news though. We can talk about it. It's kind of case specific, team to team. But all in all, a pretty interesting slate after a nice little run of basketball over the last couple of days. We had some weird injury reporting. I got to ask you a question. I know you were attending for your sick wife last night, so you weren't too into what was happening with basketball. But last night, at what point do we need to put the Knicks? I'll walk you through the scenario. The Knicks beat writers just on kind of like blast about like them doing their job. So last night, it's reported from multiple sources that Kylo Quinn is going to start over Michael Beasley, which like kind of makes no sense, but whatever. They're going to start O'Quinn and Cantor for the Knicks. And then, so it's like, okay, we'll move Beasley to the bench and then we'll start O'Quinn. And then at like 7:10, after the starting lineups are announced, after Michael Beasley has his name called out by the court announcer and, you know, runs and high fives all of his teammates down the starting line and does like the, you know, the jump up into the chest bump or whatever that he's starting. It's like, sure. It kind of gets reported. It's like, oh, no, new starting lineup is actually Michael Beasley. Can you think of a team that this happens more with? Like I said, like last year we had Rose, who was like in another state at one point, and they're like, no one could even figure that out. So that starting lineup, and he's a starter. So
that was a situation where like, the game started, right? Like, and there was a no note anywhere. The game had begun.
It was the same exact thing. They called up the starting lineup. They're like, starting at point guard, Ron Baker or whatever. And it was like, wait a second. All the Knick beat writers look at each other and say, well, where's D. Rose? And then it was like, it turns out he was just like on a plane going somewhere else, like not even in the stadium, hadn't been there all day. I mean, I feel like this happens with them a lot, just like with injury reporting and stuff. Do you think it's like access to the team? Do you think, it just seems like some teams are bad with information, and I just think some teams' reporters are bad at figuring things out. Like, I can't figure out what the difference is, but the Knicks seem particularly bad at this.
Yeah, I think it's probably just a don't give a hoot mentality of the team itself, because I feel like most teams understand the game and like kind of go out of their way to share the relevant information, which makes perfect sense, by the way, because that's like the whole point of having a press around, so you can communicate with your fans and the people that care about your team. And the Knicks are just like, whatever, dude. They'll know in 10 minutes who's going to be playing and who isn't. Like, it is crazy. I don't understand that, because it doesn't seem like a very challenging thing to do with an organization that size that has that much money going around. Just have one guy. It doesn't even have to be his only job, although for most teams it would be. Just have like one of the ball boys be like, hey, just go let him know D. Rose isn't playing. Okay.
Or is that even here? Like, he's just like, he's in Illinois or whatever. I just make it so crazy. I don't want to get too tilted about this, because in the end, you know, a lot of DFS is information gathering, and you got to just be able to trust sources or not. And it's on to you if you want to trust the source or not. And so I don't blame anyone, except that it's just so crazy that some teams were so crystal clear about what, like, there's almost never a monkey wrench. And then there's some teams where it's just, all among your inches. And actually, it does seem like sometimes those teams like switch their roles, because I feel like in the past, Toronto has been really bad at that and now are just kind of good. Obviously, the Spurs were one of the – there's jokes. People still make jokes about getting popped, even though that's not really a thing anymore. He just – now they're very open about what they do, except it's just moved to the rest of the league. And I think it's going to continue moving this way as teams – just work with the schedules, and the, you know, the schedules are hard, and the fact that there's certain players, like so many players are getting hurt now, I think you're just going to see more and more rest and probably just figuring out about it too late. Anyway, all right, let's get into tonight's games. 7 o'clock game, Miami goes in and plays Toronto. Toronto, decent favorites here. I mean, they've been very good this season, so it's not a total surprise, but they're -7.5 against Miami team. It's very hard to figure out on a night-to-night basis. So Kelly Olynyk is out. And you would think, we talked about this in the past, you would think losing a guy like Olynyk, and they've already lost Waiters early in the year, so they're kind of without two main guys that they went into the season that were going to play. You know, Olynyk wasn't going to start, but they were going to play significant minutes. And you would think that this thing would kind of work itself out with their rotations, and it kind of just doesn't. They start Winslow, and they play him 16 minutes, and then James Johnson sometimes starts, doesn't matter, and sometimes come off the bench, and that kind of doesn't matter. And Dragic will see a 26-minute game in a close one. Like, I don't know what to make.
Adebayo and Johnson basically just flip-flop minutes the last two games, so it's just anybody's guess, basically. And if either of them gets a start and plays real minutes, they can be an excellent play. But you just don't know. That's the excitement, Doug. You know, will Abadai will play 15 minutes or 32? I don't know. I can't wait to find out.
The one guy I actually think you can sort of trust is Tyler. They have moved Tyler Johnson into the starting lineup over the last couple games, and his minutes have been fairly secure. It was a kind of a question last time about whether he was going to start, and then Derek Jones was inactive, and Johnson did get the start and played significant minutes. He's only $4,800, and it's also just a very bad matchup on a guy who – he can disappear at times. Like, he's not a lock. I think he's pretty scoring dependent. So, I mean, do you see Johnson? I don't trust anyone on the Miami side of the ball, frankly, unless the situations where they're running with eight guys, because they have dealt with a lot of injuries. But with D Wade in the mix now too, I mean, is Johnson even worthy of trust for cash games at $4,800 on FanDuel?
$4,200 on FanDuel. And yes, I do think he is worthy of trust.
Probably at DraftKings, sorry.
Wade came in last game, played 22 minutes, which is about what he had been playing with Cleveland. And I don't see any reason to think that he's going to play more than that. I think that's probably, I'd like to think, especially with Cleveland's difficulties, that if he were capable of playing more minutes, he probably would have been. He kind of worked hard out there. But the thing about Wade now, he's not a scorer, really. And they need the scoring out of Johnson. You know, they have a lot of guys who are kind of not shot creators, kind of defense first, or, you know, stand in a corner and shoot a three type guys. I think they really like Johnson for his ability to create. So I think his minutes are pretty secure there. I think $4,200 is a steal. I think it'll be up in that $5,500 or so range somewhat soon. And I'm not one to pass up on deals like that while they last these days, because they just don't last for as long as they used to.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's hard to find cheap guys. We run into this more and more this season with just finding, rounding out lineups with puntish plays has become harder and harder on a nightly basis, especially on FanDuel. It's actually, honestly, at this point, a little easier on DraftKings just because of the multi-position eligibility. Moving into the Toronto side, it's been a while since we really played, I mean, for our site's purposes, played a lot, many Raptors. I don't know. I'm trying to think of the last time we played a Lowry or a DeRozan or anyone, and then maybe a little bit of Ibaka here and there. And Valanciunas is a guy who is very difficult to also trust on a night-to-night basis with minutes. Is this the matchup we want to target Toronto guys? I'm not completely seeing it. They're such a deep team. And they're a good team, and it's just not a team that we tend to just focus on too much in DFS.
No, they do a lot of things that good teams do that actually makes them worse for DFS purposes, which is play people consistent minutes on their top end. And then when they don't have obvious guys to just plug in, they play matchups. And that can be interesting for GPPs, for just your straight cash game purposes, especially in a really slow matchup against Miami. Miami now the third slowest team in the league per pace, and a top of the pack defensive efficiency team too. So now there's nothing really to like for me on the Toronto side.
I mean, they played blowout after blowout too. They won by 20. Oh, yeah. They won by 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, 4.5 games. I would the last 4.5 of the 5 games, basically, because this Memphis one, they won by 15. All the other ones, they've won by like basically 20 or more. They've just been blowing teams out, which is also, I mean, he's dropped a couple of their guys' prices, not totally, but their starters just haven't had to run over 30 minutes at all. And now you have a 7.5 line. The 7.5 line doesn't really usually indicate blowout, but the lines going into these other games that they had weren't all that high either. So interesting team. I don't think one that we'll be targeting too much tonight. 8 o'clock game. This one is interesting and probably has the most DFS implications of any game on the slate. Cleveland plays the Thunder. And the big issue here is whether or not Westbrook and Melo are going to play. So it's not a binary thing. I mean, one could play and one could not. They both sat out the last two games with injury, and that's opened up the door for Felton. Abrines got the start last game. It's also, you know, makes sense. Excuse me, not make sense. It also provides a ton of usage for a guy like Paul George. Mm-hmm. It's hard to really answer this question right now because we don't know. This one, like I said, this one is so just dependent on this news. Like the Westbrook to Felton thing matters, and then Melo matters as well, only because the power forward position. I mean,
so, question for you though, because I like Felton. You know, if the opportunity opens up, he's a price and opportunity mismatch guy to me. What about Paul George? Now the price is up to $10,000. I get that he's been paying it with some regularity in the absence of those guys, but like that's a pretty tall order. We've never seen a Paul George, even back to the Indiana days, where he never had to worry about Melo or Westbrook or anyone like that eating into his usage. We never saw him support a price this high. Is that something you think we can rely on?
Yeah, I don't know. It's close. I mean, the last three games, he shot 24 shots, 25 shots, 23 shots. That's incredible usage for really anybody. And if you're removing Westbrook, and by the way, they've won two of the last three games. I guess the last two games have been without Russ, but they beat and then they got crushed by the Lakers. It's always so hard to figure out, you know, is this going to be the actual plan with him? I think if Melo came back and let's say it was no Russ, but Melo, we could probably dump down his usage just a little bit because Melo is kind of like a lot of on ball time when he's in there. So I think I would feel better about it if it was both of them out. I mean, he's been pretty much there at this price, not completely. It's hard. It's very, very close. I wouldn't be sold on it. I'd also just be worried they get blown out by Cleveland without those two other guys. So I'm not really sure. I think we'll have to wait and see. This one has too many, like if this guy plays, if this one doesn't, I think if both Melo and Westbrook were out, I think I would feel okay about PG and I wouldn't feel great about it. I think that's like does that make sense? I don't know. I know I'm kind of waffling here, but, I think he just might be a slightly different player than we saw in those Indiana teams, only because like he's just the whole team now. Like he never probably needed to be either in Cleveland. Like for scoring purposes, he just needs to be the only guy that's there.
Maybe. I think that's a reasonable hypothesis. It's just tough for me to trust, given how little of it we've seen. And you know, we've seen guys go like DeRozan comes to mind. Maybe guys who have kind of out of nowhere shot up to these mid-20s shots, and if their friends don't come back, they oftentimes don't sustain it forever outside of like Westbrook when Durant went down a couple of years ago. It's just really hard to shoot that many shots per night. It's why basically nobody in the league does it. And I'm not sure George has that kind of instinct to put that many shots in the air. Maybe he does, you know, we'll see. But the 8 assists when he was playing against Memphis last game leads me to believe that, you know, he is looking to pass and that kind of thing too. And we'll see. I think he's a reasonable play. Nothing I would be overly excited about though against Cleveland here, particularly after reading your article about how they may have shored up some of their defensive worries, you know, in bringing on Nance and some of these other pieces too. So yeah, playable, I think, but not an automatic payoff for me.
Cleveland's interesting. I did, like you said, I wrote a piece where I just kind of broke down some tape of that Cleveland win against the Celtics and kind of try to figure out like, you know, how much of that is real. I think the blowout, how much they won by, is not really that correct, because I think you don't want to overreact to how many points they put up, because they just shot like 55% from three and the Celtics shot 27%. And if you even just normalize even that a little bit, the game is way closer. Both of those teams are so wildly on either side of the bell curve of like expectation on the 3-point shot. So I think that the game was a lot closer than the final score would lead you to believe. But also at the same time, the Celtics defense just looked way better. They couldn't have gotten worse. So let's put it that way. The defense they were playing with a Thomas on the court and Crowder was the worst you'll ever see defense being played, basically. So it would be hard to imagine with really any personnel shift that they could get worse. But the fact that what they added here in Hill, the Hill perimeter defense looked very good. The Nance defense when they brought him in looked unbelievable. So the fact that how active he is on the defensive end, I think they probably would stick him on PG a little bit. That's really neither here nor there for defensive or for DFS purposes. On the Cleveland side of the ball, though, from a DFS standpoint, they're going to stick with the same starting lineup. They started Hill, Osman, JR, Thompson, and LeBron, and they brought in Clarkson, Hood, and Nance in off the bench. Do you think we see a situation where, you know, those guys all worked in really well? LeBron looked like he loved playing. It's easy to love playing with someone when you shoot 55% from three and just blow someone out. So everyone loves each other in situations like that. That's not lost on me. Do you think, though, over the course of time, we see, like, it'll be harder and harder to trust some of the DFS implications from this team because they are possibly just more incentivized to further work in the guys that they brought in, like Clarkson, like Nance, like, you know, Osman maybe plays less. I thought about this last night and I was having a little trouble figuring out what maybe Cleveland's plan is because they played in a blowout. Do you think we just see maybe like a subtle shift toward, it seems like you'd want to play Hood more than Osman going forward. And I'm just not sure, like, how do we work on predicting that?
Yeah, I think like it comes to most things, prediction when you don't have any evidence for something is going to be a lot more difficult than predicting, because we're always in the game of prediction. Like every night, right, we're trying to predict how things are going to shake out the following day. I think what it does is it introduces a new level of risk to Osman and to Hood as well. You know, both, I mean, with Hood, it's like risk to play him in cash games because if he just maintains a current level of usage, maybe doesn't support these prices. But, you know, you play him in a big tournament and you catch lightning in a bottle, you catch the first night where it all works, then it will come together for you. But yeah, the combination of the blowout, the new personnel, I think you're playing with fire, assuming that Osman is going to continue to get the minutes that these guys that they just traded a pretty hefty price tag to acquire will get the play time, you know. But with Hood, it's kind of funny because we did see the Jazz kind of have a lukewarm relationship with playing him tons of minutes too. You know, there could be kind of a league philosophy that he is a second unit guy, or, you know, who knows what happens with these sorts of things. But nonetheless, I think I would be monitoring coach speak pretty carefully here, because as soon as you hear things like, yeah, I think we're going to try and get Rodney some more minutes tonight, that's the night where you stop playing Osman, but not necessarily the night where you play Hood.
Right. And so when you look at this game, it's just so hard to figure what their actual plan was going to be, just if the game hadn't been a blowout, because Osman was up to 29 minutes and really just didn't need to play any part of the fourth quarter, or, you know, midway through the fourth quarter and on. Same with Hill, really just all these guys. It's hard to tell, you know, who was there because of the blowout. I mean, a lot of these guys didn't play near the end. That was like the Calderones and Collins of the world. Those were the last like 5-6 minutes of the game. It's hard to know what their crunch time unit was going to be. And this also is a team that's much deeper now. So they were already flirting with different crunch time units. Just when they were moving around personnel, they were kind of just stuck with whatever was working at the time. And that could still be the case here, because they're much deeper and more athletic now that you could just see, if someone's having a good game, that's the guy who just closes the game out. And now they just have a lot of wing guys that can do that now. So it'll be interesting to see. This is, luckily, Oklahoma City is a tough defensive matchup, so we don't have to go crazy on the Cleveland guys either. All right. Other 8 o'clock game, Atlanta goes in and faces Milwaukee. Milwaukee is a -7.5 favorite here. They are going to be without John Henson tonight. He had sat and then played and then is going to sit again, but they are going to get Jabari Parker back. Thonmaker had started in Henson's place the other day. Though with Parker back, it'll be interesting to see what they run out there for their starting unit. They are -7.5 favorites against, I mean, one of the best DFS matchups you can have. Atlanta's a very, very bad defense. It's just, of all the big money payoffs tonight, are we looking at Giannis here as the guy to pay up for? He's the most expensive on FanDuel at 11.8, edges out LeBron at 11.5, and then we have Harden at 11.3. I'm wondering where we stand with Giannis in relation to just some of these other big money guys tonight.
Yeah, I think he's probably a pretty solid one. I have a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth about Giannis recently, just because, you know, the arrival of Bledsoe has, you know, all but killed the assist numbers for me, and that makes him a little bit of a less appealing prospect. Also, seems like when he's less involved in the game, you know, the scoring and the rebounding and that kind of thing, I just worry that it's not going to be as consistent going forward, I guess I'll say. That being said, paying sort of in the neighborhood of this price, up until the last four games, and then things have tailed off as well. I still think in the best possible matchup, and given the matchups for some of these other guys, you know, like, you're not going to play Westbrook if he's coming back from injury. You're probably not going to want to run LeBron into the gauntlet of OKC. You know, Harden's playable, but outside of him, he kind of seems like the very obvious big money payoff. So I would play him tonight, but it's not the kind of thing where, who'd be a good example of this? Say, Westbrook was going up against Atlanta when fully healthy. That would be a little bit of a different situation, where I would, you know, first put him in and then figure out how to build a lineup around him. So yeah, like Giannis tonight, not feeling, and he probably is a must play, but, you know, for big tournaments or something, I think you can probably fade him.
Yeah, it's so hard.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, with Giannis, it's just so hard to know, because the two things that boosted so much of his line early in the season where he was getting outsized defensive numbers, and like you said, the assists, and he flirted with it. But like you said, if you look at his game log, it's been kind of a while since you've been feeling very good about this price. And I thought we'd see something more like a price dip on him, and it just doesn't seem to happen. Like, I don't really know when we're going to get him back into like that 11.2 range, or like even like the 11,000 range, because he really hasn't been a $12,000 player in a while. So I just don't know. Yeah, I'm just like, it's weird about these algorithms because it doesn't seem like he should still be priced this high. And yet it still feels weird to avoid him anyway. So
well, yeah, the long run is long. That's the thing. And like, you know, our system understands that, you know, probably even FanDuel and DraftKings pricing algorithms understand that things can change rapidly in the NBA. So that's like the art of DFS. It's not just taking prior stats and dividing them by the number of games and then plugging them in on DVP numbers. If it were that easy, then you wouldn't have a game because every single person would do that. So there's definitely some art to projecting how opportunity changes over time, both in terms of minutes and then usage and just time of possession and that sort of thing when on the court. So yeah, John is currently presenting a difficult case there. But yeah, that punt situation in Milwaukee is interesting too, I think. Historically, we haven't seen Thon Maker, even when given the opportunity to be in the starting lineup and you know, in the increased opportunity from other people sitting, we haven't seen him play those sort of mid 20 minutes. Do you think that's the plan going forward if in situations like where Henson is missing, or do you think we see him drift back down to that 17 to 22 minutes a game sort of stretch that he's done in the past?
I think having Parker around there allows them to just run him at the five and then just kind of get away with not. The other thing too, is like, this is, you see the same thing with Cleveland, is that when you have guys like Giannis and LeBron on your team, you don't need a traditional center as much
you
as other
teams,
because
just
those
a defensive guy to play that spot,
or those guys play the five. Like the, like they run Giannis at the five at times. Just when if another team is going small, like if another team is not going to put out a traditional center either because they're playing catch up or whatever, that's just the rotation and teams do this less and less. You just play Giannis at the five and you feel pretty much okay with it. I think like I don't like especially too if it's a non offensive minded guy. Or if it's just a guy that drifts around the perimeter. There's lots. There's almost more situations where you can run Giannis out there. Not usually with the first group because, you know, teams, that's where teams will throw out their center. But really after that, you're not really too worried about the defensive implications of just playing him there. So now, and then you move Parker into the mix as well, and you just don't need to play Maker as much. So I think that's more of what it is more than anything. And he's young, and I think they just have never show they want to play him significant minutes. I think my guess is he's a defensive liability. I mean, it's like pencil thin. He's so small in terms of like just like overall heft. So I think that's really more what it is on the Maker side. Atlanta, one interesting guy for Atlanta, and I don't know why they did this now, but they moved Dwayne Dedmon into the starting lineup, which feels like the thing they should have done a long time ago to boost his draft stock. And because I think they wanted to trade him, and then they just kind of regulated him to the bench. He was injured for a while, too. But they moved him into the starting lineup last game after the trade deadline was over, and they didn't move him. And he was awesome. Like, he's very good. He's a guy like analytics people just kind of love in terms of just the guy that just shouldn't be on the Hawks, should just be on a team that's actually good. Played 31 minutes against Detroit, went 20 points, 13 rebounds, threw in some blocks and steals as well. He's 5,800. So he's not a punt. He really wasn't even a punt that day, but he's definitely not a punt now. But with this new opportunity, do you think, one, is he a play at 5,800? And two, do you think people get uncomfortable with this kind of price? Because it's like Dwayne Dedmon at 6,000. Right. Why would I want to play Dwayne Dedmon at 6,000? But this is like the new world of DFS. You need to pick up on these new opportunities really, really quickly. What are your thoughts here on Dedmon?
Seems expensive. And when I break it down on a points per minute basis, you know, the last game is the outlier rather than the rule. You know, we see him sustaining something around a fantasy point per minute in the past, generally trending just under it. And I think that's about what you can expect here as well. You know, if he's going to play 31 minutes, maybe something like 27-ish fantasy points. And that's if he stays on the court and there's no foul trouble and they don't change their mind and decide to play him 23 minutes again. So I think you're taking on some risk here by rolling out Dedmon. I don't think it's an unreasonable risk to take. I just don't think you should expect that he's going to turn into a 1.5 fantasy point per minute guy. And not that you're doing that, but I think, you know, this is something I see our chatters and, you know, other kind of casual or learning players fall into where they're like, well, hey, he got in the new role. And all of a sudden it's like, yeah, a new role doesn't necessarily mean you're just going to start rebounding at a rate twice as fast as that you've rebounded in the past. Like that's tends to not be how it works out. So, yeah, I think solid play. Don't count on the 47 fantasy points.
He's helped also that center is incredibly thin, especially on FanDuel tonight, because you have him. Then you have Tristan Thompson, tough to trust those minutes. Whiteside, we already talked about him. McCarr, I'm going down by what we have listed as points per dollar. You have McCarr, so you're going to have trouble trusting those minutes. Adams, you don't mind that, but he's the 7,100. And then you get into some real weird places where you're like Jokic, and we'll get to Capella and these guys in a second. So I think he's mostly just helped by being cheaper than those other guys, and we're hoping on the minute stability. Sure. And also, by the way, 5,300 for him on DraftKings with dual position eligibility, because he also qualifies a power forward, is that's pretty much close to a lock for me. There's too many ways to fit him in, and 5,300 is really just kind of the perfect price. So after him, the Atlanta guys, they did play a lot of minutes. The starters, excuse me, not all of them. Prince kind of didn't play. Schroeder played 34 minutes last game. We saw Bazemore creep toward 30. Ersan Ilyasova is another one. I mean, here's the thing. Power forward on tonight is very easy. If center was thin, power forward's even worse on FanDuel. The decisions really after Bertans are really pretty horrible. I mean, is Ilyasova a guy we can consider in cash games at 4,600? I have him for 27 minutes right now. That seems safe-ish. He played 28 and 26 the last two games, and then 15 and 19 the games before. Is he a guy that we can just kind of hold our nose and say we can possibly just run this guy out in cash?
Yeah, probably. I think 27 minutes sounds like the right number to me. A little bit scoring dependent. You know, can rebound, does very little on the defensive end, never ever gets an assist so far since he's returned. Has no assists under 100 or so minutes that he's played. 80 minutes, I guess. So that makes things pretty tricky for him. But yeah, 4,600 is a bargain. And sometimes, you know, the thing I've written up, I think I wrote this up for Sunday's article, actually, when I wrote the picks, is like, when you're at a bad position, oftentimes, and you're like, wow, this cheap money guy is not very good. And well, these expensive guys aren't very good on their price, but I kind of recognize them as reliable sorts of players. Like maybe, I don't know, the center might be an interesting way to look at this as well today with Steven Adams, where it's like 7,000, generally a little bit too much to pay for this guy. Well, if you don't like any of your options at a position, just pick the cheap one and find good options at some other position. And I think Ilyasova kind of falls into that category for me, where it's like, I'm not super excited to see his name show up in the lineup, but just because there's other names out there that I recognize more doesn't mean I should play them if they're also bad plays at their price point. Yeah, I'll take the cheap guy in Ilyasova and feel okay with it.
Moving in, hit us up with a sponsor, then we'll move to these last three games.
Sure. Let's talk about fantasyfactor.com. Fantasy Factor, great place to go to play, $5 to $100 or so per night. They offer NBA free rolls every Friday. You can get in there and get started, get your feet wet. And if you do, I think you'll enjoy yourself. I mean, they do offer that same salary cap game format like you're used to, very slick software, easy cash outs, trustworthy and reliable, much more so than many of the other kind of non-FanDuel and DraftKings sites out there. So really do like fantasyfactor.com. Check them out and get involved in that free roll this Friday.
Interesting game at 8 o'clock here. Also, Houston goes in and plays Minnesota. They are 2.5 point favorites on the road. Houston looks like they're going to be fully healthy outside of Ariza, so they are still running out basically the same lineup, I think, that they've run out the last couple games. They may have to go a little bit bigger to deal with some of the inside presence of Minnesota. They did sign Brandon Wright, but he's not going to play tonight. He's not going to make his debut. So they're going to basically run with the same team here. In games like this, we've seen games like this, by the way, I mean close games, and this one has by far the highest over under, although I guess the OKC Cleveland game hasn't been reported yet. I can't imagine it's as high as this game. With Hart at 222 in what is considered to be a thin spread at 2.5. Do we think Harden's 500 cheaper than Giannis? Are these the kind of games we see 38, 39 minutes from Harden? And are these like just like, this strikes me as like this the exact game I don't want to be not having. There's a lot of negatives coming here. I don't want to not have Harden and then have to watch a game with him and just kind of sweat out the difference. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like it's going to be harder to do that with Harden than it would with Giannis tonight. What are your thoughts here if we're comparing them for cash games?
I wouldn't say that I'm not disagreeing here, Doug.
Keep the negatives rolling, baby.
Which is to say, I agree with you. I like Harden here. I think, you know, you compare him and Giannis, both of them sort of have a bumpy track record recently of paying these lofty price tags. Harden's matchup is worse, but I really do like the reduction in blowout risk. Minnesota, kind of funny this season, they played a bottom seven pace in the league, but have actually been pretty rough on the defensive efficiency side. So they kind of come out as a league neutral matchup for opposing fantasy players. And for a guy like Harden, that's oftentimes all he needs, you know, being able to step in and kind of ensure that the minutes are going to be there. Not that anything is a sure thing in DFS world, but you know, we've been kind of waiting for those minutes to creep back up ever since he returned from an injury of his own. And, you know, he's flirted with it. He's touched 36, got back down to 34. I think in a game that rates to be close, that Houston would just as soon win. And I think their plan is ultimately to get Harden's minutes back up into the high 30s just because they won't be able to help themselves. I think he's totally playable here. It's kind of funny, though, outside of him, people have tried desperately to find value at the other wing positions, and it's been very, very difficult to do so. And I'm going to throw lump almost all of the other players on this team into that category, like outside of Capella and Chris Paul, where, you know, it's like, will it be Ryan Anderson? Will it be Mbah Mute? Will it be Gerald Green, PJ Tucker, Eric Gordon? I don't know. But like none of them has really fulfilled any sort of promise. And so I think there's probably a lot of total in this game that Vegas, if you ask them, would be this kind of like haphazardly spreading out between a bunch of guys who individually probably aren't super likely to pay off their prices today. But I'm curious to know what you think about that kind of potpourri of guys from 3,700 up to like 4,500 on their team.
Yeah, they just need to hit their open threes and you're just praying that they do it. I mean, they don't really do anything else, right? Like they just kind of, if they're hitting corner threes, then you're going to creep up to just about 5X value on them. Cool. And if they're not hitting it, then you're dead because they just don't do all the other stuff. Harden controls so much of what the pace of the flow of the game, right, and Paul too, that they're never going to have the ball in their hands ever. So basically they're hoping they can stand out in the corner and get good open looks. Now the Rockets do that better than almost any team in basketball. So it's possible to have it happen. But yeah, after those guys, I really at times have had interest in those guys, but they almost need to be like two of them need to be absent, right? Like it needs to be Ariza and Anderson gone or something like that. Like, and so that you can play Tucker and Mbah Mute. But even when three of them are there, it just doesn't, there's just not enough stuff in a basketball game. It sounds like so unanalytical, but stuff in a basketball game to go around for them to do anything. Now I am interested in Capella. Capella's price has really shot up. He's up to, well, he's only 7,500 on DraftKings, which strikes me as something of a bargain. He is only, I just had it in front of me. He's 8,300 on FanDuel. He's been very good in the short term, like basically double-doubling every single night. It feels like they would need his size and presence here against guys like Towns. Do you think he's a guy, like when we're talking about that center position, that we would want to maybe overpay for a little bit? I'm more talking about a FanDuel because I think the DraftKings price is more palatable. But does he strike you as a guy that we might do like a slight overpay on just for maybe some more set production?
Yeah, potentially. I think that's a pretty reasonable approach to take in a situation like this. It's also just worth noting that across these slates, like, you know, these small slates this season, there's a real big difference between the haves and the have-nots in terms of consistent production and matchups. And the, on a slate that's so light on consistent production and a slate, like if you just go through these games, Cleveland, Oklahoma City has the terrible OKC matchup. Sacramento, Dallas, well, neither of those teams is a very good matchup for opposing DFS teams. Denver, San Antonio, very tricky just because San Antonio is slow and there's potential blowout risk. Miami, Toronto, two bad defensive matchups, right? So like, and then Atlanta, Milwaukee, two good matchups, but some weird minutes questions. And so anytime, and that's why I think this game is such an interesting one to highlight tonight, both for the high total and, you know, we talked about it kind of being a curse for some teams like the Raptors, but in this game with a high total, consistent minutes actually could just be a good thing. So yeah, I'm open to anyone who's like, especially for cash, anyone who like seems kind of boring, but is fairly likely to get me like 4.9X points per dollar. I'm there.
Well, that strikes me as like, the Minnesota guys, like, do you feel that they're in that category? Can we set guys like at Wiggins and Butler? Like, do we just want to put Butler like 39, 40 minutes in this game? This is a game that they really probably want to win. I mean, they want to win
Butler for sure.
So like I'm realizing I'm a little bit low on some of these. I think I had these guys set at like blowout numbers for the last time around, but you know, we want to put Butler at like 39 minutes, Wiggins at 38 minutes, Towns is always a guy I want to give more minutes and he kind of never gets them really. Like he just kind of plays 33.
Yeah, I don't think it works with Towns. You know, Towns and Teague have kind of seeing their roles reduced a little bit. Minnesota, you know, like I think in my mind, I always picture all these guys playing 37, 38 minutes. Yep. That's how it felt for a long stretch of the season, primarily in the beginning of the year, the actual year, not the season. But guys like Towns, Gibson, actually too, and Teague, they've all sort of trended a little bit lower, but the prices haven't really changed. And so I'm less excited about those three, more excited about, I am somewhat excited about Wiggins just because his price was depressed by a rough shooting stretch. His minutes are through the roof. He's still playing 37 to 39 minutes a game. We recommended him against Sacramento in spite of great kvetching by all of our supporters. And he went out there and got 5X points per dollar. So still like Wiggins. I think Butler is kind of priced on the high side, but you do know that the minutes are secure. And he's been paying this somewhat reliably recently too. So I like Butler. Just do be cautious because Minnesota across the board isn't that same team that was playing everyone 37 minutes a game like they were earlier this season.
Right, yeah, that's what's always so hard to do when they've gotten a little more trust in guys like Crawford coming off the bench, Tyus Jones coming off the bench, and whenever that starts happening for a guy like Tibbs, like, because his big thing is that he didn't trust anybody except for the five guys that he deemed the starters. That's been his track record for forever. And now that he's seeing it's so funny about Tyus Jones too, because I think I've mentioned, I can't remember if I mentioned this in the podcast, but the unit with Tyus Jones over Jeff Teague is like one of the better net rating lineups just like in the NBA this season. And they just take such a dip on defense with Teague. Like, you don't need Teague's offense, but you just really like Tyus Jones's defense. So it's just interesting if they're just starting to see that that might be more of a path forward. All right, let's get into these last two games. Sacramento goes in and plays Dallas. Dallas minus 7.5 favorites, which you're not going to see every night, but that's probably speaks more to the Kings' state of affairs than anything. Dallas is coming off a game where they sat out basically everyone. They sat out Dirk, they sat out Barea, and they sat someone else who I just can't remember off the top of my head right now. Those are the two big ones that stick out. But those guys are all going to be back tonight. Oh, and Wes Matthews. Those guys look like they're all going to be back playing tonight. They are a team at times that play minutes to their starters. They're also kind of trying to tank. The Kings also stink. Like, I don't really know what to do, if anything, with the Dallas side of the ball tonight.
Yeah, I don't think that there is much you can do. I mean, you've seen people put up good performances against the Kings just because they're simply so poor defensively. But Dallas just isn't a very exciting team. You know, they're filled with a lot of guys who are sort of priced appropriately slash too much. You know, like, if you go up and down this team, it's very strange, actually. You can look at guys like Harrison Barnes. You can look at guys like Wes Matthews. And when you see their price totals, you click on their game logs expecting to see some sort of, like, consistency around that production. And it's just like FanDuel or DraftKings or whoever just hates these guys. You know, like, they just go out there, like Matthews, $5,700 salary, 24 fantasy points a game. Terrible. Harrison Barnes, $7,000 salary, 30 fantasy points per game. Terrible. You know, right. Gets outside of that. And, you know, you start to see some playable guys in like Dennis Smith Jr. You know, he can sort of sustain these prices. But again, do you want to run him out there against one of the slowest teams in the league? I'm just not so sure. So I don't think I'm too excited about those guys. Dwight Powell, I think, is somewhat interesting, although I want to caution people about too much enthusiasm, because we're seeing, I mean, he's always been a pretty good guy on a fantasy point per minute basis, but we're seeing him kind of outkick his coverage slightly. I think the real story is the minutes, and him going from 31, 23, 28 in the last few games leads me to believe that maybe his minutes, his role isn't as secure as the price jump would imply. And that makes me a little bit gun shy. Not to say he's totally unplayable. Again, it's a pretty thin night, but just be a little bit cautious in your projections of him, I think.
Yeah, he had some context wrapped into that. Like, he started in the game where they sat everybody, and then the Barnes sat out two games ago, and he started that game as well. So just, I don't
exactly. Just they, like, did things coming and going for him.
Mm-hmm. Right, they did move JJ Barea into the starting lineup, and he's an interesting $4,700 play on DraftKings. I'm not over the moon about it, because he still, even if he starts, doesn't see crazy minutes because they bring Yogi Ferrell in off the bench to play a lot of two guard. But they are without Devin Harris now, and Devin Harris, while he in himself was not really much of a DFS consideration, his 18 minutes a game kind of were. And so those have been portioned out to the remaining guards in Smith, Farrell, and Barea. So Barea at 4,700, interesting on DraftKings, not a must play or anything, but at times these kind of prices are the hardest to fit. So they could end up becoming maybe considerations tonight. Sacramento continue to just do their own thing, except for, what are your thoughts here on De'Aaron Fox? Now, they got rid of George Hill. They have no real other point guard, traditional kind of point guard on the team. Garrett Temple runs the point at times, and Buddy Hield doesn't really. They don't really have much in the way of ball handlers on this team. It hasn't really stopped them in the past, because the Kings are the Kings. They don't really care, and they're just trying to lose. But are we comfortable with De'Aaron Fox somewhere like in the 34 to 35 minute range as primarily a scorer, because that's kind of what he does? What are your thoughts here on Fox?
Yeah, I like Fox. I think, you know, I wrote him up going into Sunday's games. I think he is one of the consistent guys going on this team right now. You know, 6,000 is the most you've had to pay for him all season. It's not a super good matchup against Dallas, but we did see a reasonable proxy for this last week where he went out there and played 35 minutes and scored just about 30 fantasy points. So again, in that category of guys who can go and get you 4.9x fantasy points per dollar, well, that's exactly what he did in this matchup last week. So I think, you know, not a guy you'd necessarily go out of your way to X out of your lineups if you came in like on our optimal lineups at dfsr.com/NBA. But I think you have better options at point guard tonight, particularly if you can get Felton in there. Like, I would always play Felton and Tyler Johnson pretty much for both big tournaments and for cash games. So he's kind of an odd man out looking into me.
Final game, we have the Spurs go in and play the Nuggets. LaMarcus Aldridge has already been ruled out for tonight. Now, the Spurs are on a back-to-back when they played yesterday evening. And, gosh, there was a close game, and I can't remember who they played. So, anyway, I'll look that up in a second. But they are coming on the back-to-back. Gasol was something like – oh, they played Utah. Gasol was like a 97% start on DraftKings last night in cash games, which is like completely unheard of for that kind of, for even anything more than a three-game slate or something like that. To see that kind of ownership on a site like DraftKings where – you know, putting together lineups is somewhat difficult. And he more than paid it off. He was great 15 and 15. Now, the problem here is it's on the back-to-back, and we've seen the Spurs more than any other team. They want to win, but never at the cost of running a player out there for more minutes than they think the guy can handle. Because they're just like, our thing is that we just sort of win no matter who we have, all right?
And like, we're going to be in the playoffs, right? So like,
right. I mean, they're right. They're
getting our hands about seeding and all that other stuff. Like, it's a marathon, brother. Not a sprint.
Right. It would be a miracle for them to drop below the four seed at this point, or the wrong kind of miracle. But so I think that they feel pretty secure with that. It's also a very late game, and I just don't know if we're going to have the news. And, like, you know, the Spurs at times are pretty good about reporting this, and sometimes it's still 3.5 hours before the game, and we just simply don't know. Where do we want to stand on a guy like Gasol and or his replacements in a situation where this could be a great punt situation? If they're going to be without Gasol, I mean, already without Kawhi and without Aldridge, there's going to be a lot of minutes, especially for some big men in this game. And I'm just not sure we're going to have the news in time outside of Bertans, who seems like the clear play tonight.
That's a guy I was going to say. I think Bertans is going to play, and I think he's cheap, and he's at a bad position. And he's the type of guy where we like his role even if Gasol plays. And if Gasol's out, all of a sudden it just skyrockets for me. So I love Bertans here. I think with Gasol and any other potential big man plays like Joffrey Laverne or, you know, whatever other direction you want to lean in, you probably want some sort of clarity. You want some kind of news because, you know, they've decided just to sit Aldridge through the All-Star break. Like, are they going to really? I think Powell is very clearly still part of their playoff plan, and he's not one of those young guys like Kawhi or somebody where they're like, whatever, and like, let's just leave him in there. You see them be pretty cautious with him on back-to-backs so far this season, you know, sometimes playing just 20 minutes. Like, he sat that Cleveland game earlier this month that was on a back-to-back, played just 12 minutes in the second half of back-to-back against Philly. So even if Gasol plays, it's no sure bet that he's actually going to play the minutes you're hoping for. So I think on a really high price tag, I just want to hear something.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard because right now, I guess the point differential is not that bad because I was looking at on DraftKings, he's in 100% of the DraftKings lineups, and I was just taking a look at what and we have him at only 27 minutes. I say only 27 because that is low.
That would be low if you were playing his full minutes.
In a vacuum game, right, without Aldridge. But it looks like you only take about 1.5 differential down on Gasol to the next top lineup without him. So it's a little bit more palatable than I thought it was going to be. Denver side. San Antonio, even without their best players, is still a very tough defensive matchup. Guys like Jokic, Jamal Murray, any of these guys interest you at all on a six-game slate against a good defensive team?
Yeah, not really. Jokic, I think he's just interesting again because you pointed out earlier the center position is so thin that it's really tough to get good value. But, you know, and the price has actually come down on him a little bit after a couple wonky games, game scripts with minutes against Houston and Phoenix. I would rather not, you know, anytime I'm going up against San Antonio, I would almost always rather not. But the question is too, like, what do you even do for DVP stats against a team like San Antonio, who's not playing any of the players that they normally play, right? Like, is San Antonio minus all of their good players still one of the worst matchups in the league? I'm just not totally sure. You know, you can use on-court, off-court data like NBA Wowie, but that only gets you so far. And I think the bigger thing we probably want to look at is just San Antonio's overall pace of play. It's probably less likely that they get super fast based on not having their good players, but I don't know. I'm still pretty hesitant to want to run anyone out there in this matchup, given how little I would know about who the personnel they would be facing would be.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem, I think. And so hopefully we get some Spurs news. My guess is if I had to put money on it now, Gasol is active, and what happens is what happened, like you just described the last game, is he's active, he starts, he plays 15 minutes, right? I think that would be, and that's just
Denver favored by 12 by 6.5 right now too, by the way. So that's potentially points to that Vegas believes something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and they're just very thin right now. They're without Aldridge and Kawhi. They're basically without their two best players, and it's a miracle that they're even this still kind of this good without the guys that
yeah, they're pretty without
the two best guys going into the season. All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/NBA gets you that free 3-day trial. Also, go over to the site this week. I should have mentioned it at the top of the article, but our boy Chris Durrell is over in down in Daytona this week doing some big-time NASCAR coverage for the Daytona 500, invited down there by the NASCAR peeps themselves to go down there and just kind of do a full-on media experience. So really proud of him for all the work he's done. So go and keep an eye on the site. And he's got a bunch of stuff, videos, podcasts, some Snapchat stuff going up over the course of the week about his experience. He's traveling there today, but I think he's starting tomorrow. He's going to be posting stuff. So go check that out just on the main page. That's free, dfsr.com. Go check out what Durrell is doing. We'll be back again tomorrow for a huge day in the NBA where I believe just about every team is playing as they get ready for the All-Star break. So dfsr.com/NBA, free 3-day trial. Go check that out, buddy. Talk to you again tomorrow for a big Wednesday in the NBA.
Peace.